Final case this morning is number 153195, Cobb v. Merit Systems Protection Board. Mr. Edmonds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, may it please the Court. There are two errors that the Board committed below in this case that require reversal, and I think the first of them is fairly straightforward. The requirement for Ms. Cobb before the Board was that she present, in order to be entitled to a jurisdictional hearing, was that she present evidence which, if proven, would establish the board, or allegations which, if proven, would establish the board's jurisdiction. She did that. She alleged that she was, based on her record with the Postal Service of over 10 years of service, based on her expectation, based on what happened to others similarly situated at the same location at which she was hired, that she was, for all practical purposes, a permanent employee. This was not a job where she went in to the Postal Service and expected to be terminated at the end of a period of time. In fact, she understood that time to be her vacation time. And she was, of course, paid out for her accrued leave. What the government and the board argue, and what is what they do repeatedly in the board's decisions and in the briefing, is treat this as if it's a substantial evidence case. They treat it as if Ms. Cobb's allegations are too conclusory or are just not sufficient. She did not submit anything to contradict the documentary evidence provided by the SF-50s that the Postal Service submitted. And
well,
what
let
she,
me ask you, I mean, hypothetically, let's say we have a record that shows every single SF-50 showed that even though she'd been there for 10 years, she was on 10 consecutive one-year term limited appointments. Is it, in the face of that overwhelming evidence, sufficient for her to say, well, I thought I was on a career appointment?
I think, Your Honor, where you get to the problem is that you're then looking at whether that's overwhelming evidence.
Well, and this court's... Okay, take aside my word overwhelming. Right. Hypothetically, the only record evidence we have, the only documentary evidence, is SF-50 showing all of it's a term appointment. And the employee comes in and says, I thought I was on a career appointment. Is that sufficient to be a non-frivolous allegation?
There is a line that is somewhere in between where you have an employee coming forward and saying, I am a temporary employee, I am, you know, I was hired for one temporary shift, and therefore I am, you know, entitled to restoration rights if you ignore the argument number two at this stage. There's a line between that and this case, and I think your question would
be... Where is the line, though? Because it seems to me that basically, I mean, there's a lot of term appointments here. There's no record evidence that you cited to, I think, that suggests that she was ever appointed on an official document to a career civil service job. Your argument basically is that she had expected to be appointed to one if she had not been injured. But that seems to me to be different than she was actually a career appointee.
Well, herein that everyone else was. I mean, everyone else at her location was appointed to a career position.
Later, though, right?
Later on. Well, I'm not sure when, Your Honor. In truth, her allegations would be more specific because she would get on the stand and testify at an evidentiary
hearing.
But
those people still had to... I mean, those people weren't also in appointments, term appointments that were automatically converted. They had to apply for and be accepted into a career appointment position, just like she was given the opportunity to do, right?
Well, the collective bargaining agreement letter that I think is at A124 through 127, there's a summary of it, and then the actual letter shows that, in fact, people that were appointed with her, I mean, it actually proves her claim that everyone else was transitioned into this CCA position, and then from that, it says explicitly, and I think it's on A124, possibly A125, that they could then, you know, they would then have the opportunity for permanent status. So I think that the answer is that everyone was, and that the only reason that she wasn't, and I think the MSPB actually acknowledges this on page 6 of the board's brief, that these people could do this. And I think that her allegation is that the only reason she wasn't given that similar opportunity was because she was out, because she was injured twice, in fact, on the job.
So, but here's the problem. It seems like you're going backwards on this. You're arguing that if that if she'd been given her restoration rights properly, she would have been a career employee, and therefore she would have been entitled to appeal to the board to argue that her restoration rights weren't given properly. But in order to appeal to the board under OPM's regulation, you can't be a time-limited employee.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that gets to the second argument, which is whether or not, you know, that's correct, whether that's correct interpretation of the regulation, and whether that's regulation, if that is a correct interpretation of the regulation, and that's the interpretation that the board has taken,
right,
is a correct interpretation of the statute.
Okay, I'd like to get to that, too, because I think that's a little confusing here. Your argument is that that's inconsistent with the statute to only give appeal rights to I'm going to use career employees as a shorthand. I don't mean it to be some kind
right.
of term of art.
No,
I mean to distinguish it from time-limited appointees. But the statute doesn't give any appeal rights, does it?
The statute itself does not confer appeal rights. No.
So if OPM elected to, it could have chosen not to give anybody appeal rights over restoration claims, right?
That is an interesting point, Your Honor, and I'm not sure I'm able to answer that right here because I do not recall seeing the appeal rights in a statute, but I think you're making a point.
Well, in Chapter 75, in disciplinary matters, it gives you appeal rights if you have a suspension for more than 14 days, but no appeal rights if it's less than 14 days.
That's
so correct. There are plenty of statutes that distinguish between appeal rights and non-appeal rights. And this is an instance where there's no appeal rights whatsoever, and OPM exercising another separate statutory authority, which it allows it to provide for appeals to the board, said, we're going to give it to career, we're not going to give it to temporary. Is that inconsistent with the statute that didn't give appeal rights at all?
I'm not certain that in the statute, as I sit here today, because I haven't thought of the point that Your Honor raises, that there is nothing in any of the statutes that provides for, and not this specific, you know, 8151, but in the whole act, or elsewhere in Title V of the United States Code, that does not confer an appeal right here. But I think if you assume that it doesn't...
Let's assume it doesn't.
I think that you then have to... there has to be a basis for OPM and its regulations to distinguish between the two that is not arbitrary. And I am not of anything...
Isn't that inherent in the civil service system as a whole, that term-limited employees generally don't have appeal rights to the board over large swaths of different actions. Even if they're term-limited employees that serve for 20 years on one-year appointments, they don't have an appeal right. So isn't that per se a reasonable distinction that OPM could have made between term-limited employees and career employees?
I don't think it's per se a reasonable distinction because you have here a specific statute, and it has to be tethered to the statute. There are other statutes that govern appeal rights and other regulations, and those decisions that, for example, would not allow someone in Ms. Cobb's position to appeal to the board if it were a removal action, for example, those are based on different statutes and on different policies. And I think the court would have to look at each individual one to see if this distinction that OPM drew is one that is reasonable. But I think that it's not something that OPM drew in the first place. OPM nowhere signified an intent to determine the appellate rights. It purports in the regulation, if you read it as the board and the United States suggest, to determine what restoration rights are there. It's not purporting to determine who has the right to appeal, because in the regulation, if anyone has restoration rights, they're given the right to appeal to the board. So I don't think that's a distinction that OPM drew, and I don't think it's a distinction that wouldn't be arbitrary given the...
I get your point. I think there is some tension here because the regulation specifies that the restoration rights only applies to non-time-limited employees.
I think the court probably understands...
I think that's maybe the correct reading. That seems to me about restoration rights to be inconsistent with the statute potentially, but the statute doesn't speak to appeal rights. So they could have limited term-limited employees' appeal rights, but maybe not restoration rights. And I suppose your best argument would be that's arbitrary because this regulation doesn't really do that. It tries to exclude terminated employees altogether.
Right, and I think that that's the case. I think they weren't dealing with appeal rights when they drafted this regulation, and maybe that's something they could have, you know, hung their hat on if they had engaged in a rulemaking that considered this and that, you know, was intended to do that. But if that reading of the regulation is correct, and I think the court understands the reading that I'm arguing for, which is something that would avoid the tension with the controlling statute if that were the correct reading to be employed.
Well, I don't know how we get around their regulation except for finding it arbitrary and capricious, which I'm not sure you've argued for in this way, because it seems to me that the regulation is very plain on its face that it only applies to appointments without time limitation or this other taper thing, which I know is not at issue. And so if the regulation only applies to appointments without time limitation, it can't apply to term limited employees, including the appeal rights section of that regulation.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that the interpretation, the question is where the clause that begins with who was separated or furloughed, where that goes, and whether that's modifying the clause immediately preceding it, or whether that's modifying the original, the beginning of the sentence that talks about any employee of an agency of the United States. And one argument supporting the construction that the who applies the wholly owned instrumentality of the United States is the fact that regulations are supposed to be interpreted consistently with the controlling statutory authority to avoid that tension.
Well, if that's the case, then wouldn't we interpret it as allowing restoration rights to temporary employees, but not appeal rights, because they said no appeal rights and no restoration rights, but clearly under the statute they're entitled to restoration rights.
Well, clearly they're entitled to restoration rights, and the way the regulation goes, the series of regulations, is that if you have restoration rights, you just get appeal rights. So they didn't draw that distinction, and I think that's the problem. The agency didn't actually do it, so the court...
I'm not sure whether they did or not. It's hard to tell what they did.
Well, the way this is structured, what they intend to do is give appeal rights to everybody who is contained in this first provision and everybody who has them. If you look at the regulation as a whole, and I don't have the actual provision.
I mean, the problem is, for me, is this regulation seems to be a mashup of two different kinds of restoration rights. And so they added in these recovery from injury rights to the return from uniform services rights. And the statute for uniform services, I think, makes clear that it only covers career employees. You have no restoration right if you are a term-limited employee at all under that statute, whereas your statute may cover term-limited employees. So it makes sense that the regulation for uniform services excludes term-limited employees from restoration rights altogether. But when they added in the return from injury people, they didn't seem to modify the language. I don't know what they did altogether here.
Well, this is it, right? And the statute 8151 simply says that it applies to both classes, both the recovered within 1 year and the recovered after 1 year. So it would be arbitrary if the regulation
I know you're into your rebuttal time, but are you contending that she was recovered within 1 year and has an unconditional right, or that she was recovered beyond 1 year and that, you know, they have to show that it wasn't arbitrary and capricious not to?
She's clearly only partially recovered in this case. The facts are that. But again, the facts are that she, to go back to Your Honor's first.
So here's the, and I know this is beyond the jurisdictional point, but given that she was in a term limited appointment that's expired, if all she's trying to get in is the agency has to make a reasonable effort to return her to her position, that position no longer exists. Can't they just say, isn't what's going to happen on remand if we give it to you, they're just going to say there is no position for you to return to, you weren't selected for this other position, so you're out on the merits?
I think, Your Honor, that goes back to the evidentiary hearing issue, where she would be able to present evidence and develop a record that says, well, look, all of these people were actually converted.
Right, but the MSPB still can't order her appointed to a career position that she wasn't selected for.
No, but it could have ordered her appointed to a city carrier position, which is what the evidence
that's
submitted by
position.
The Postal Service.
No, it can't do that. I mean, that's a career position, right?
No, it's
all
a,
she
not
left.
A,
what all she
it's
left.
Term limited.
But there are no term limited positions of that in existence anymore, is my understanding.
There are three positions. There is the permanent position of a letter carrier. There is the CCA position, which is what is talked about in the appendix at 124 to 127. And then there is the position that she occupied, which is the TE position, transitional employee position. And so all the TEs, I mean, what she would show, what the evidence would show if she were entitled and able to present it, is that all of those people who were TEs were in fact made CCAs, and that all of them in fact are still there. And I think that that distinction goes to the time when she, you know, something factually that she wasn't entitled or she wasn't given the opportunity to present. I think that she was based on her allegations. Again, she worked at the same place. She was treated, I think that everyone there must have had an expectation that she would come back year after year after year after year. The SF-50s under Grigsby simply don't control. And
okay,
I think
and,
I've
and
used
we're, you're
my rebuttal way, time and more.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Smith?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. I'd like to start with Judge Hughes' comment about the statute, and what appeal rights it provides.
Well, I'd like to start with the regulation, because I think the statute's very clear that it doesn't give you appeal rights. The regulation is a mess, because the regulation seems to, on its face, preclude restoration rights for term employees. And that's not consistent with the statute, is it?
I would disagree with that, because the statute says nothing on its face about term-limited employees. It also says nothing
did you look at the legislative history? The legislative history is pretty clear, because it doesn't define it one way or another, that it includes all employees.
Well, it doesn't define it one way or another, so if you're going to say the statute is ambiguous because it is silent, then I think you need to give Chevron deference to OPM and to OPM's regulations interpreting the statute.
Now, well, there's your problem, because the regulations are pretty unclear, in my view. If you look at 353.304, it says an individual who is partially recovered from a compensable injury may appeal to the MSPB for a determination of whether the agency is acting arbitrarily and capriciously in denying restoration. That's a broad appeal regulation, which seems to encompass this individual, even though she is only partially recovered and even though she is on a term-limited appointment, correct?
Well, the 304 gives restoration rights to partially recovered employees, which, by the way, are not given in the statute.
But try to answer my question. My question is, on its face, isn't she within the first sentence of 304C?
She is, but she is not within section 353.103, which defines people who are entitled
to
restoration rights.
So what you're saying, is that 103 cabins 304.
Exactly.
But it seems to me that's not necessarily true on the face of it, because 103 doesn't say the only people who have appeal rights are permanent employees and these certain specified temporary employees.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with that, because I think it is pretty clear that it specifically excludes term-limited employees. It says anybody who is who is separated from employment without time limitation, and by definition, if you have a time limitation...
Yeah, but it's just saying who has rights. It's not saying who doesn't have rights, correct?
That says that they do have rights if they're separated from employment without time
limitation. And here you have another regulation which says that she has rights, and you're taking an implication from 102 or 103, whatever it is, to cabin 304.
Well, I think that's the logical thing to do because of the order in which these regulations come. You usually have your definitions at the beginning. That's exactly what this is here. Persons covered is a definition of who falls under the regulation, and then you have the rest of the regulation telling you what your rights are if you fall under that category of persons covered.
Well, the problem is the regulations aren't very clear, right?
I feel they're clear,
can you answer this? I know you disagree, but hypothetically, let's assume I read 8151, the statute, as plainly covering both career and time-limited employees. If that's the case, then this regulation excluding time-limited employees from restoration rights conflicts with the statute, right?
If you believe the statute is that explicit and that clear, then yes, I would have to agree.
So if that's the case, but I think you also would have an argument that even though they have restoration rights, OPM didn't have to give them appeal rights. What, you can have restoration rights without appeal rights,
that's,
right?
That's correct.
But it's not clear to me that's what OPM intended to do with this regulation. So what do we do with this? If we find that the regulation excluding term people from restoration rights is inconsistent with the statute, but we don't know whether OPM would have given appeal rights to term people if it thought the statute covered it or not, how do we resolve that?
I guess you would want to hear from OPM, and there, I mean, there is a provision for the board by which OPM can defend its regulations if those are in question, and that's section, I believe, 5 U.S.C. section 1204F, if I remember correctly, in which the board.
Well, why wouldn't you construe the regulation then to give the appeal rights to the temporary employee? Certainly, why wouldn't you construe the regulations to give the appeal rights to the partially recovered temporary employees? If in fact the statute covers those people,
well, I'm to be clear, I'm not conceding that it does, and I think
no,
it's,
but
I would have to say that if there is a clear conflict in the statute, then that is problematic. I don't think there is a conflict in the statute. I think the statute at worst is ambiguous. It doesn't speak to either partially recovered employees or to temporary employees. In fact, the legislative history specifically invites OPM to promulgate regulations concerning partially recovered employees, which OPM has done.
I mean, doesn't the statute define, for purposes of this, of FIPCA, an employee is defined as a civil officer or employee in any branch of the government?
Yes. But it does not say career, temporary. It doesn't use the language that is used in the regulations. So at worst, I believe that it would be ambiguous because it's silent on that question. I would also like to address Ms. Cobb's claim that she was not really a temporary employee, but if you have further questions on this issue, I would want to address those as well.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Regarding her claim that she was not really a temporary employee, I think the record is quite clear, as you pointed out, Judge Hughes, that all of her SF-50s point only to temporary appointments, and there is nothing, there is no documents and no specific allegations in the record that would contradict that. Everything she says is conclusory, and to the extent that she introduced anything that was not conclusory, she did so extremely late before this court. She never, for example, pointed out before the administrative judge or the board that she was forced to take vacations at certain intervals that would coincide with her breaks from service. That's a sort of specific allegation that perhaps could have led to a jurisdictional hearing, but neither that allegation or anything else specific was ever presented to the administrative judge or the board.
Anything more?
There are no further questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Hellman?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The distinction...
Is there anything in the history of the rulemaking for this regulation that has any answers to this that you know of? I looked and I couldn't find anything.
I couldn't find anything either, Your Honor, although I think the basic...
So let me ask you the question I just asked your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume that the statute covers both career and term-limited employees for restoration rights. And so that part of the regulation that limits it to career employees is inconsistent. OPM still, I think in my view, could have not given an appeal rights to term-limited employees, but it's not clear to me that that's what they intended to do. So how do we resolve this if that's our problem? Have you talked to OPM about this case?
No, Your Honor. Taking Your Honor's hypothetical that the statute clearly covers both term-limited and career employees, which I think our position is it does not, I do agree. It would seem that there would be a distinction between appeal rights in...
do you think there's... I mean, there's nothing in the regulatory... I mean, I looked very hard and it did not seem to me that there is anything in the Federal Register or the history of the rulemaking and this statute and the rules for it go back to like 1914 that discusses these distinctions and whether you get appeal rights if you're a career employee but not a term employee, but you get restoration rights altogether.
Nothing that mentions the distinction between those types of employees with respect to appeal rights or with respect to restoration rights. Because I think it makes sense to make the distinction with respect to restoration
rights. No, you're right. I mean, if you read the statute your way and say the statute only applies to career employees, right, then everything's consistent.
Right, which is our position, because it talks about regular full-time employment, the government agencies have seasonal employees that, you know, Park Service, that they retire year after year.
Where does the statute talk about regular full-time employment?
The statute talks about regular full-time employment, where it says the department or agency, which was the last employer.
What section are you in?
I'm in 5 U.S.C. 8151B1, which talks about after the injured employee resumes regular full-time employment with the United States. So the term resumes means that
they just resume to work.
Well, regular full-time employment, and our position is that ambiguous.
This is the this is the problem. Regular full-time employment doesn't have any real meaning in civil service law. I'm not aware of that kind of term being used to refer to either career or term limited employees. You could just as easily read that to mean they come back to work full-time.
Sure, but the preface of that section says under regulations issued by OPM. And so
here's the problem, though. You never in any of that regulatory rulemaking explain or provide an interpretation of that term and that it's ambiguous and you think that it means only career employees. I mean, I guess your answer is that's what the regulations say, so presumably that's what they meant.
Yes, and specifically 5 CFR 353.103B talks about what they mean by employee. And again, it goes back to the nature of the temporary versus permanent type of positions. As in Ms. Cobb's case, her position no longer existed by the time she recovered from her injury because it was a term position. It makes no sense to offer restoration rights in that context. So I think the purpose behind the OPM regulations is reasonable.
Well, except that it could make sense to offer restoration rights to term-limited employees. If sometimes terms aren't 1 year, sometimes they're 2 years. If you get injured on the job, you know, 3 months into your two-year appointment, you recover 6 months later, Congress could have meant for those people to have an unconditional right to return.
They could have, but they delegated this to the agency, and I submit that the agency's regulation here is reasonable. There may be other reasonable regulations as well, but I think under Chevron, it just has to be reasonable. If the court does not have additional questions specifically on the statutory interpretation point, I'm happy to sit.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Howland. Mr. Edmonds, we gave you 2 minutes here.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate the additional time. It was very quick. I want to return to point one that I made, which is the point that she gets an evidentiary hearing. A lot of the arguments that are made, and there's a summary, there's a list of them, and I think we've responded to them in our brief, are directed to what she would have presented had she been given the chance to provide evidence. What happened in this case was it got derailed very early in what the board in its brief at page 5 incorrectly refers to as a motion to dismiss the MSPB appeal. This was in order.
I'm not sure how these factual allegations help you, because all you're saying is, if she had restoration rights, she would have been converted to a full-time employee. But we first have to resolve whether the regulation itself could have given her restoration rights, and if it doesn't apply to term-limited employees, which she indisputably was at a certain point in time because she never actually was formally converted, then you can't bootstrap the restoration rights to accord her career rights that would then entitle her to rely on the restoration rights statute.
Well, I think we have to be very clear about what the evidence is being used for. And the evidence that other people were similarly treated isn't being used to show the fact that she, I mean, the fact that she would have been converted makes out a claim.
Are you trying to say that the evidence shows that she was converted?
No, that she was a permanent ab initio. So she was hired to do a job that lasted 10 years with the Postal Service where everyone else was treated in a way they were given a permanent job at the end of
their... They were given a permanent job. They weren't in a permanent job.
Well, that's my, again, that's my language of this argument. But what actually happened was she was hired. They were hired. They stayed at the Postal Service.
Let me ask you this.
So
absent, because you're still, I think, saying she would have been converted, not that she was converted. Absent an official act from the Postal Service, was she a career employee?
She started as a career employee because of the nature of her employment and because of what was being done in the Postal Service at that time. So,
so if she was a career employee and they didn't let her come back to work, she would have had the right to appeal this as an adverse action removal. Because she was a career employee and they didn't let her work.
If it had been an adverse action removal, but it was not. It was a failure to restore. But yes, she would have had those rights. That would follow from this conclusion. But in this case...
Are you aware of any case where somebody can claim just because they served on a bunch of term limited appointments and that everybody else got converted, that they were de facto converted?
There is no such case, Your Honor, and I've looked for it. But the case that does allow this is Grigsby. SF-50s don't control, and there are subsequent, in fact, one that must have appeared after we filed our reply brief, though it was decided before Luna, where the court, it's non-precedential, but the court talks about it being a totality of the circumstances test. And the point is that she has the right to demonstrate from a totality of the circumstances what the nature of her employment relationship was because the SF-50s don't control. And that's the only evidence. And again, we're talking about evidence that she has the right to dispute, to impeach, to do whatever she wants with it and present her own in full at an evidentiary hearing. But the only evidence that they rely on is the SF-50s. So they're not saying, there's no contention contrary to her allegations that in fact all of the people who were hired in this way were ever expected to simply be temporary.
Okay,
because
I think we're about...
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Edmonds.
You.
Thank both counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this morning.
Thank you.